The U.S. and Iran have had a rocky few weeks, all related to Iran's nuclear ambitions and the U.S.'s desire to keep them in check. For most of the last decade, the Iran nuclear agreement had been the means to that end. But getting to the deal in the first place was an exercise in top-secret diplomacy. If that sounds at all glamorous, Lacey Healy is here to set us straight. Healy is an expert on nuclear policy. The latest episode of her podcast, Things That Go Boom, tells the behind-the-scenes story of how the Iran nuclear deal happened and the people who got it done. Here is Lacey Healy.
There was this moment in 2012 when the U.S. and Iran almost stumbled into a war. The tension had been ratcheting up for months. And the U.S. had tried everything. Diplomacy, sanctions, sabotage, and outright threats. Meanwhile, Israel was sitting on a knife's edge, drawing literal red lines that drove home predictions that the country might launch an attack any day.
Could Israel launch an attack on Iran before the U.S. election in November? As the drums of war beat louder in Israel.
But Iran still seemed to be marching toward a bomb.
Shows that there is more installation of centrifuges in this Fordo plant.
Then, like something straight out of the movies, the Obama administration gets this offer from a mysterious fixer for the Sultan of Oman, a tiny little country in the Gulf. The Sultan's fresh off his successful negotiation to free a group of American hikers held in Iran, and he wants to set up a secret meeting. Like 007 secret. This would be a last-ditch diplomatic effort to avert a military strike on Iran. So, who do you call when you need your very own Bond?
My name is Jake Sullivan. I served in the Obama administration at both the State Department and the White House.
Then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton calls her aide Jake.
I land in Muscat, and I am met at the bottom of the stairs of the plane by an Omani in traditional Omani dress with the headscarf and the robes, who puts me in a car. Okay, sorry. No.
Okay, so maybe he's not quite Bond.
I'm not a good poker player. I turn red very easily. I have the Irish Catholic guilt thing. So I'm not all that well designed for this kind of subterfuge. I arrive in Muscat in the middle of the night, having just flown in coach class, carrying my bag, trying to sleep along the way, but being a little too excited to sleep.
The meeting in Oman is so secret, Jake lets his colleagues believe he has to slip away for a family emergency.
I get there probably around midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, and I drive to an empty house that is the residence of a senior diplomat in the U.S. embassy in Muscat, in Oman.
Once he arrives, Jake meets with another colleague, Puneet Talwar. And this is where you get a real sense of the glamorous life of a top administration official.
Puneet takes one of the kids' bedrooms and sleeps on a kid's bed. And Puneet's over 6 feet tall, so his feet are coming off the edge of the bed. And I take the couch and sleep on the couch.
And you are not of short stature either.
No. So I guess the technical term is I curl up on the couch.
Right.
And we try to get a few hours sleep before the series of meetings that we're meant to have the next day. It was very much a question mark as to whether this was real.
When Jake wakes up the next morning, he's not 100% sure the Iranians will even show up. They've been playing a back-and-forth game of telephone for months, the White House talking to the Omanis, then the Omanis to the Iranians, who go back home, talk it over, and call up the Omanis, who get back to the White House. It's a logistical nightmare. And Jake is not a logistical nightmare kind of guy. So when the day of the meeting with the Iranians finally comes, he's on edge.
It's this kind of almost staged, managed entry, the big reveal where we both walk in through these doors and they instinctively put their hands on their chests to send the signal to us. Essentially, we don't want to be rude, but we're also not here to shake your hands. So we got the message.
It's an awkward introduction. And the truth is, Jake still doesn't know exactly who these guys are.
You have the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, you have the clerics, you have the judiciary, you have the president.
So they start to talk, slowly, because
statement, interpretation.
Interpreters.
Statement, interpretation. It made it feel like we were not driving the Indy 500 at top speed, we were taking a nice lap around the track.
And eventually, Jake starts to breathe a sigh of relief.
It becomes clear fairly early on in this first session that these are serious professionals. They spoke as definitively as we did about the authority and the blessing that they had.
But it doesn't take long before that pit of anxiety in his stomach, it starts to come back.
They have expectations about what they're going to get from the United States, and they have expectations that they're not going to have to give up very much to get it.
Jake starts to realize how long this is going to take, if it's going to happen at all. And he also realizes he's going to have to break the news to Secretary Clinton.
Well, the fact is, I am very tired and frankly, very stressed. I feel like I didn't crack the code with the Iranians.
You didn't save the world one meeting?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, did we screw this up somehow? You know, did we say something wrong? Could we have made progress if we had taken a different tack?
To get back to Clinton's team, Jake has to ping pong from Muscat to Dubai, Dubai to Beijing, and Beijing to his final destination, where he gets in an SUV. He's bumping over country roads for hours.
And by the way, I'm a little bit of an unreliable narrator on this because I'm in a something of a fog as this goes on. But I see a kind of large circular structure, tented structure. And I walk in and everyone is in the middle of a Mongolian feast.
In a giant yurt. Clinton and her team are in Mongolia on part of a tour dedicated to the Obama administration's so-called pivot to Asia. And remember how Jake let his colleagues believe he had a family emergency?
They're worried about me. And so they all come up and say, are you okay? And of course, I'm like, well, no, not entirely. I'm really stressed and tired. But
there you go.
I can't share with them what's happening.
And then there's Clinton. He needs to tell her what happened with the Iranians, but he can't. Needless to say, your typical yurt isn't exactly a secure place for top secret communications.
And I catch Secretary Clinton's eye, and I speak in sort of coded, guarded language just to give her the very top line, because she's heard nothing at this point.
Clinton decides to press on. They know the chances are slim, but it's worth it. The stakes are high. Iran's nuclear program is getting scarier by the day.
If Iran actually got a nuclear weapon, that would set off an arms race across the Middle East and potentially across the world, because the Saudis and the Turks and the Egyptians and others would all feel like they should get nuclear weapons.
And hey, maybe that doesn't sound so bad. There are actually some experts who argue that the more weapons we all have, the less we'll want to lob them at each other. But then you remember, it just takes one.
It just takes one. Hear the rest of the story in Lacey Healy's podcast, Things That Go Boom, from PRI and PRX. And you can game out how you would negotiate and make decisions about nuclear weapons at nucleardecisions.org.